cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. The Fan. On demand. His city. His house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show. 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Govern yourselves accordingly, depending on what part of the planet you are currently occupying. Yours truly, Bob McCown. Ken Reed will be in here in a little bit. Michael Grange is here for the first hour of the show. Jeff Blair will join us in a few moments in studio. Dil Muhammad is a mayoral candidate in Mississauga who has decided, wouldn't it be great if the Argonauts played here, and he has this big plan. I don't know if he's got a pot to pee in, but he's got a plan. We're going to bring the Argos to Mississauga, going to build a 25,000-seat stadium. We're going to put some stores around it and giddy up. He's missing a couple things.
There's a little, I just detect a little skepticism.
Well, this isn't a plan. This is a political position. Those are two entirely different things. If he's got a plan, and he's got an owner, and he's prepared to give all of the money from the good citizens of Mississauga to building this facility, which probably costs $100 million plus.
Minimum.
If he's got all those things, then he's got a plan. From what I see, he's got a political position. That's what he's got. Those are two entirely different things. I don't think this would be the first time that a politician stood on the stump in anticipation of being elected and promised to do stuff and then never did it. And in fact, never intended to do it. And in fact, knew he couldn't do it even when he said he was going to do it.
Have you ever heard of Dil Muhammad prior to this moment?
No idea who he is.
See, it worked.
Well, I get it. I understand that's what he's got here. He's got a political position. It's a good political position to have. In terms of getting attention. But is there any there? Well, this is what we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. But I would also make the point that posturing, which I think is the label we could put on that, is a risky business because it can backfire on you depending on your posture.
Well, there are two issues. If I was still a resident, I used to be a resident of Mississauga. If I was still a resident of Mississauga, I'd be concerned, number one, with why would I want to, as a taxpayer, endorse the expenditure of such a grandiose amount of money for, a sport that will only occupy it for 9 weekends a year, B, a team that nobody seems to care about. Do you think more people will go to Argo games in Mississauga that will go in Toronto? I don't. But I respect somebody who puts his money where his mouth is.
Sure.
The problem I have with political candidates is it isn't their money. It's somebody else's money. They want to have control of the money that the city of Mississauga has. And as a taxpayer, I'm saying, hang on a sec. Are you sure this is the best use for this money? And I would say, frankly, no.
There's that. I mean, if this was 4 or 5 years ago and the Pan Am Games was still in the planning stages and maybe somebody was figuring out a way that, you know, U of T Arendale could be the site of some kind of mixed-use stadium that would subsequently service, you know, another, you know, a Soccer that's Canada the, type thing. Things that you hate.
But that's the two wrongs equal a right scenario, you know?
But
let's
my
do
point
the
is,
Pan Am Games. Wrong. And in conjunction with the Pan Am Games, let's build a 25,000-seat stadium that we don't need for the Pan Am Games, and then we'll give it to the Toronto Argonauts. Wrong.
Right. Correct. But that even that sort of limp scaffolding isn't in place. So, you know, he's coming on. We'll be very curious to hear what he says.
Well,
I would encourage you to be
stadium for the
Panthers. I would encourage you to be kind because he is a guest.
Well, I'll do what I damn well want to.
Okay.
Because the truth of the matter is, you're a guest too. Having said that,
I'm a paid guest. I'm going to show up no matter what you say to me.
I always give people a chance.
Sure.
I understand what he's doing. I'm not critical of what he's doing. I get that it's a political ploy. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm buying it.
Meanwhile, I think there was a groundbreaking today down at BMO for the place that most people think the Argos
broke ground.
Something like that. For the renovation that doesn't, for now, include plans for football.
Right.
Soccer.
Well, because it's a soccer stadium.
Yeah. But.
Well, I don't care about any of that stuff anymore. I mean, and now I care less because now it's MLSE that's putting the money in there.
$90 million.
So they say. Now they want $10 million from the province and $10 million from the feds, and I'm told they're not going to get it.
They're getting $10 million from the city in the form of a loan that they pay back. The province, from my understanding, has previously committed $10 million pending the feds' $10 million. The $10 million, the feds have said, we are not giving you $10 million, so that puts the province's money in limbo. The only thing, I had a long conversation with Bob Hunter of MLSE about this last week, I think, and the one thing that did come out of that is this renovation is being planned in stages, and really the adjustment required for CFL football could come at the end quite simply and require about 6 months of construction, and if you back out from that, maybe about 6 months notice, and by the way, about another $10 or $15 million. On top of presuming the province's $10 million is still in there. So I personally feel eventually that's where it'll go.
Well, you're not too bright, so we take that into account.
That's why you have me here.
No, it's not why. We have you here in spite of the fact
that okay.
You're not too bright.
But no, but I mean, my lack of brightness gives you a...
Look, anything is possible. This Mississauga thing is possible. But it's got more holes than Swiss cheese.
There's only... these things are typically the simplest things happen. Right? Generally. And there's two simple solutions to the Argos problem. One is the Argos cease to exist. Mm-hmm. And that's really not that simple. I mean, when you've got a league that depends on having some presence in the Toronto market. And the other is somehow, some way, another $10 million is found, the money that the feds won't come up with. And that triggers that $10 million that the province previously said they'll provide. And the Argos end up at BMO. Now, does that mean the CFL somehow figures out a way to come up with a $10 million bond issue? I don't know.
Who's going to own them?
Well, I think once they have a lease deal that is palatable.
How do you figure? They lose $6 million a year. How are you going to change
that?
You
would presume they might lose.
So you're buying into the whole theory that the whole problem
of
Toronto Argonauts.
This is the theory I'm buying into.
You're buying into the theory that the Toronto Argonauts problem is Rogers Centre.
I'm acknowledging that that doesn't help whatever problem this has. What I'm saying is the Argos have always been owned by somebody. It's in my cognizant lifetime, like since say 1980, they've been some variation of a distress. And certainly in the last 20 years, my professional career, they've always been a distress.
Never like this.
Okay.
It's never been this
bad.
Well,
the Sherwood Schwartz era?
No.
Not that good.
It was never this bad.
I don't know about that.
Never.
I don't know about
that. They have 3,000 season tickets sold.
Regardless.
It's the lowest in the history of the franchise.
So they've always been owned by somebody. There always seems to be somebody willing to own them. The league itself has arguably never been in better position. So if you could magically, and I do acknowledge it would require a bit of magic in the sense that there's no one willing to do what I'm suggesting at the moment. If you could magically pick them up, put them in a renovated BMO field, have the 20 odd or 25 or even 30,000 people who have quite recently been known to show up. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, it looks empty in there, and I know this year's worse than others, and you put them in there and it looked like a sellout most nights. I think in those circumstances, you don't lose maybe as much money as you're talking about. Maybe you break even. I don't know. The league itself is a more robust enterprise, and is there not somebody out there who might want to have fun with a professional sports franchise?
Not at that price.
Someone who's not going
to. Ask Cinnamon and Sokolowski. Go ask them. They wanted to have fun with the football team.
Right, and they did.
Until they lost their asses, sure, and said, enough of this.
Right.
Can't
but
do
they're
this
not
anymore.
The only rich people in the Greater Toronto Area. There are other rich people who
well,
like
no,
football.
But I mean...
And they're not going to buy this NFL team. They're not going to afford the Leafs. They're not going to buy the Raptors.
But it's a money loser. It's not a business.
Lots of sports teams lose money, Bob. And there's a lot of people who have a lot of money who...
are willing to lose it.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're worth a few hundred million bucks and
let me tell you the difference.
A bit of that and you can...
Yeah. I understand that. Here's the difference.
I mean, I can't relate.
You walk down the street as the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Toronto Blue Jays, or you walk down the street as the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Jets. You know, if you walk down the street and you're in a big-time sport with big-time...
There's a payoff. Eagle.
The owner of the Toronto Argonauts can walk down the street from Yonge Street, top to bottom, the world's longest street, and not get recognized.
Well, I would say
not get stopped once.
And that would have been true of the owner of the Montreal Alouettes, and then at a certain point, and then they stumbled into, and we all know it was a fluke, they stumbled into Molson Stadium on the McGill campus and became sort of the, you know, they started almost this small stadium revival concept in the CFL. And,
well, started it. There isn't another one. There isn't another small stadium that's been built. Ottawa built a stadium. They didn't build a particularly small one.
Well,
Hamilton built a stadium that's basically the same size as the one they tore down.
Well, anyway, the Montreal Alouette example showed that there did seem to be some kind of appetite in an urban setting for, you know, a 20,000-25,000 seat experience that was... I was there. You saw it on TV. We all talked and wrote about it. The Montreal Alouette revival was a real thing. And so had there been, and we wrote the stories about the you know, revival of football in Quebec and how, you know, there's something in that culture, and we've seen it on the university level. We've seen Quebec athletes make it to the NFL.
I don't see what that has to do with the Argonauts.
Well, and just to finish my point is, if there was somebody who, like I said, if those circumstances magically created themselves here in Toronto and there was somebody who could put their name on that and stand and take credit for that, maybe we'd all talk about them differently.
I will never underestimate the significance of the ego and stupidity of rich people. So I can't discount entirely the possibility of what you're saying. But anybody that does their due diligence on the Toronto Argonauts today, not when Harry Arness bought them, not when Cinnamon and Sokolowski bought them, not when TSN owned them, not even when Braley took over. If you did it now, what you see is an economic abyss, and that there's nothing there, but you're just throwing money after money after money into a big vacuum, a big hole, and you can't fill it up, so you can never walk across it. That's never really existed. There was always that light at the end of the tunnel. That guy who went in there says, look, I can fix this. It may be broken, but I can fix it. And if I do fix it, I can put this number of people in here, I can generate this amount of revenue, and I can make money on this. Now, nobody, maybe even including Harry Arness, but some people think Harry actually made a few bucks, but he did it mostly by spending nothing. Maybe there are people out there that have in the past looked at 50,000 seats and said, I wonder if I can fill them. But if you got 25,000 seats or 25,000 seats, at 20,000 you lose money. Wettenhall lost $2 million a year with the Alouettes at 20,000. That's why he went to 25. You know what the average attendance in Montreal is now? 19.
Right.
So attendance has actually gone down since he increased the size of the stadium. Now,
the difference
there are reasons for everything.
What's the television package worth now? It's never been more lucrative than it has been.
I don't remember the exact numbers. I'm guessing
5 years, $240 million. Is that?
I don't know.
I think it's about that. 5 years. I think it's $40 million for 5 years. So $200 million.
So there's money for everybody in there and out of the television package. Yes, I'm acknowledging that. I still don't see how you break even on the operation of this franchise.
And what I'm suggesting to you is, again,
and I don't see how you go from 3,000 season tickets to 15,000 season tickets, which is sort of the bar, just by changing locations.
Yeah.
I don't see that.
I'm not, believe me, I'm not sitting here trying to drum up, you know, partners. I'm just saying that people with more money have done stupider things.
And I acknowledge that. Blair has wandered in here uninvited, but.
I mean, you want to buy the Argos?
No, are you kidding?
I'm taking a collection.
I got 20. I should buy me a third of that.
That's $19 more ownership? Than I would pay.
Community ownership.
Don't go down
Winnipeg.
There. Don't start there.
Community ownership would be great. It's a great
idea. You better take that money off. You better take that money on the table, or I will take it.
Do you think there's any opportunity to, like, would you even think about investing in the Toronto Argonauts? No, is the answer. That's for you people on radio.
Yeah, but...
I'm conflicted. Would I like to see them stay? Yeah, I'd like to see them.
Here's the question you should ask.
I'd like to see them stay.
There's math that works.
Here's the question you should ask. Is, Jeff, you're a lifelong CFL fan.
Yes.
Grew up in Winnipeg.
Yes.
Love the Bombers.
Season ticket holder.
Know what it means.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. You have $100 million in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, a real $100 million. Not kind of, like a real $100 million and prospects of many more coming.
Mm-hmm.
Someone says, you know what? You got time on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
What's your downside risk in this?
I'm moving to Portugal if that's the case. I'm not. Well,
but I mean, you know what I mean. There are these people. They do exist, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying I know a lot of them.
Well, maybe David Braley could. Well, no, he's already.
David Braley's got the money.
I'm just saying, like, if you're
David
that guy,
Cinnamon has boatloads of money. His family is worth in the billions,
and he gave it a try,
and he didn't.
And
want
he loved it when he did it.
Yeah.
He loved it when they won the Grey Cup.
He loved everything but looking at the end of the day and looking
at
it. So
he did it for 5 years.
Gasp.
But he got in.
I honestly think it's MLSE or bust. I really do. To me, they're the only people. They're the only people.
And why did they walk away? Because even they, with all the infrastructure that they have that could support this franchise,
this is different.
They still walked away from it because it didn't make economic sense.
I don't think it is MLSE or bust because, to all of our points, there's not I don't think
there's only one.
There's
buyer.
Not a real scenario where that thing is worth the trouble, right? They own the Marlies, which isn't a big money making operation, but it feeds the beast, right? I mean, it's a necessary evil. Blah blah blah.
Keeps the lights on,
but I mean, obviously, you got to keep churning out your Kardashians, right? So, you know, there's no one who's going to get any intrinsic satisfaction out of, you know, becoming the savior of, you know, an iconic sports brand at MLSC. They're going to be like, this is probably not going to make money. Or if we sweat and figure it out every attribute we have, maybe it makes $1 million a year.
It would have to be, it's almost like a charitable undertaking for MLSC.
There's only one potential.
They're all over that.
That would make any sense whatsoever. 3, 2, 1.
Bell.
Yeah.
It's the only owner that potentially makes sense. Why? Because they own the television contract. If they believe that, first of all, everybody has the ego to believe that they can do better than what's currently being done. Now, whether they can make it profitable or not, they may say, we are so invested in this league right now, and we do not want to see what the CFL looks like without a franchise in Toronto from a television perspective, from a major corporate perspective. Therefore, we'll take the team off Braley's hands. Now, I'm told Braley's asking for $10 million. Well, he's dreaming in Technicolor. Nobody's going to pay $10 million for it. Would you pay a buck? Bell's the only company. It has the wherewithal. It has the financial wherewithal. And it is already vested in the franchise. Now, it doesn't answer the other question, which still is, where do you play? Think it's BMO. And maybe if Bell, depending on how they, you know, what happens with MLAC in the future, maybe that works. But absent that, it's X number of dollars for the franchise, and you're going to lose $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year, and you're going to have to spend $150 million to build a stadium.
That you'll never get your money back.
You'll never recoup that.
The only thing that's not happening is somebody building a stadium from scratch. That's not happening. Because nobody is that crazy.
Well, MLAC already kicked the tires on this thing and said no.
I've said often I would just assume that BMO not be converted into a facility that would allow a football team to play there. I'd prefer it to be just a soccer-specific facility and eventually become home of the Canadian national team in a sport that's growing. A sport that's growing across the country.
Soccer?
I mean yeah. I'm on that side.
How many Canadian national team games have been played at BMO?
One, maybe two. Nope.
No.
Two. I went the one.
World Cup qualifying, Honduras. I was
there. And then they played
Jamaica the other night. The women have played there a handful of times.
I'm talking about the men's team. The women have played there a couple of times, but the men's team twice.
How many years has it been open? Six?
Six. Yeah. But part of that
is... That was their big partner.
And part of that is that, I mean, the CSA doesn't play many... The Canadian men's team doesn't play many matches anyhow. That's one of the issues with
still
it.
Pretty sad.
That
was part of the pitch.
Yes, it was. And I think it should be
Eastern
part of the
Canada
pitch.
Home yep. for the Canadian national soccer team.
Have it here, and then Vancouver would be the Western Basin, and it would all work out. And I think that still has to be a large part of
two games
the raison d'etre for BMO Field.
Pretty pathetic. Pretty pathetic. Anyway, we're here. You're here to talk baseball.
Newsflash.
It is being reported John Gibbons will be back for a third consecutive season as manager of the Toronto Blue Jays in 2015. This according to people familiar with the situation. I'm familiar with the situation.
I am too. I think it's right.
and I don't know if he's going to be back or not.
Yeah, I think he is.
Well, I do too. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be back. And I would endorse his return.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've said this an awful lot. I like the way John Gibbons manages a bullpen. To me, that's how you judge a success or failure of a manager.
It's the only way, isn't it?
Everything else is.
A chimp could do.
Yeah. Well, and everything else is pretty much out of your control. I mean, how many you can put a hit and run on what once every couple of games, maybe. But how you manage your bullpen is what determines how good a manager is. And considering what he's had to work with this year, considering the injuries to Steve Dalabar, now we can talk about. Were the Jays foolish to invest as much faith in Steve Dalabar and Sergio Santos as they can? We can have that argument. But
that's not Gibbons.
That's not Gibbons.
Yeah.
Gibbons' job is,
right.
This is who I have tonight. And, you know, the other thing I'll say is for John Gibbons, to get Drew Hutchison through a year healthy, to get Marcus Stroman to the point he's at now, there are managers who would have burned out Drew Hutchison and Marcus Stroman by now. And... I think there's a lot to be said for John Gibbons for the way he and Pete Walker handled pitching.
I said this yesterday to Zani. I said I'd neither one of them would pitch the rest of the season if it was up to me. Now I know you have to cobble something together, but who cares?
I wouldn't have an issue with that. Daniel, I know Daniel. They've said Daniel Norris is pitching on Thursday. Now I would have no problem. There's no point to it. Especially after this series. You know, you can make the point that you want to be competitive because Seattle's contending. But you got three games against Baltimore. Baltimore just wants to stay healthy.
They don't care. We don't care.
Exactly.
Just, you know,
make it a triple A game.
Put a pitching machine out there.
One thing about Gibbons that I think he does deserve credit for, and this year maybe more than any other, but we saw it last year too, is he wears it. Right? Like, I mean, you know, he's been in a situation where last year he had outsized expectations. Mm-hmm. And in a year that got really crummy, really fast, you know, you never saw him crack. You never saw him kind of open up the curtain and start throwing people under the bus, players, management, ownership, anything like that. Now, that's because he's got to have a brain in his head. But it does take a certain amount of character and fortitude to do that. And this year, I think the same way largely. And I think he, you know, he's got that consistency of nature that, you know, I think makes you a manager. I couldn't do it.
I think the other thing he's done too, I mean, I had concerns when he first came in because it was pretty clear that he and Jose Bautista, he was not a big fan of Jose Bautista's antics on the field. He was not a big fan of his attitude on the field. And he was very clear about that in spring training, that things were going to change.
Looks like he won that conversation.
Well, exactly. But I always remember when he's saying that, thinking, okay, this is going to be great. I give Bautista a year, and he's going to want out. Now, unless Jose Bautista's lying to us, and I don't think he's lying to us, he is not going to ask for a trade. He's perfectly content to play out the final 2 years of his contract. If that's the case, then the fact that John Gibbons has overseen an environment where a sometimes temperamental – very talented guy who could command a lot of money as a free agent in 3 years, still wants to stay here.
And
to me says that the manager must be doing something right.
And oh, by the way, you could make the case that some of those changes that Bautista's made, to his credit, I mean, you can't, it's not like Gibbons made them for him,
right?
But that more even-keeled approach, a little more respect and understanding of umpires, et cetera, has played out. I mean, he's had an incredible year. He's got...
He only snapped once that I can remember. And even then...
And
who doesn't snap, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, find me a major league player who hasn't.
Yeah. And in that case, we can argue about whether or not he had a reason to do it, but I mean, he's not the first guy to get ejected.
The story has not been ongoing
exactly.
All year. And that's what it was the last couple of years.
Exactly.
It was an ongoing story almost day to day.
It was the rarity of it that actually made it as much of a story as it did.
The one time it happened.
And I think what happened is people looked at that. And I remember being at that game and going, God, I wonder how many times he's been ejected this year. And I'm looking, I'm going,
none.
First ejection.
And I think it's not even that. He hasn't, put his teammates in a bad position by getting under the umpire's skin, by challenging him in a way that, you wonder if there's going to be a little bit of retribution.
This is his best season ever, including the 54 home run season.
Agreed 100%.
Wow.
I love everything about what he's done. I mean, his willingness... He still hit a bunch of home runs. He'll wind up with 34, 5,
well,
whatever
he's got
it'll
five,
be.
So.
He's at 35 now?
Yeah.
So he's going to,
He'll get some MVP. He'll be in just about everybody's... Well,
he's going to get some third and fourth votes.
Oh, no, he won't get that high. I mean, he'll get seventh or eighth, but he'll be in the top 10 ballots for almost everybody. I would bet Bautista would be in there 6th, 7th, 8th.
Yeah, you can't put him at the top because...
And he's got those magic numbers that are now, in a more sabermetric, more analytic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Walks. I mean,
he's got the on base. He's going to
he first two at bats, he goes to right field.
He's done that an awful lot this year.
He would not have done that before.
2 years. Absolutely
he's
right.
Totally
2 years ago, he would
that.
Not have done that.
The one I was talking to, Ben Nicholson-Smith, who writes for Sportsnet and had a good article on Bautista today, and you almost wonder if he's entering this phase of his career. Clearly he's not going to be a 50 home run hitter, and I mean that kind of power usually wanes, but the maturity of approach suggests a kind of a sustainability.
It's
almost like a Joey, like the meticulousness of it, like a Joey Votto type. I'm gonna take a walk with the bases loaded. If they're shifting me, I'm not going to force into that shift. And maybe the power numbers come down a little bit, but you're rewarded in other categories, and it passes the baton throughout your lineup.
I had a chance to talk to a scout with the Arizona Diamondbacks who was in town a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about Bautista, and he said the same thing. He said, what's going to happen to Jose Bautista? The power numbers are going to go down. The batting average is going to go up. And
we're seeing it.
We're seeing it. But, my thing with Gibbons, I'll ask you this. Do you think the whole management team comes back intact? Do you think Beeston, Anthopoulos, and Gibbons are all back intact? Because see, I'm still hearing that there's a chance Beeston isn't back.
And that's what I was about to say. I believe there is the potential for dominoes to fall.
Mm-hmm.
If Beeston isn't back, Anthopoulos' future becomes less certain. If Beeston is back, Alex is back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's just no question in my mind that that's true. I think Beeston is loyal to him. I think he understands what Alex is trying to do. I think he understands where things have gone wrong. He still trusts Alex.
I mean,
Alex returns. Beeston doesn't.
The problem there would be is where do you define anything where Alex has gone wrong, and how do you separate that from whatever budget restrictions he clearly had?
Mm-hmm.
And when you allow for that, it's kind of hard to look at what he's done in the last, say, since the last season ended and go, well, where's the egregious mistake? Where's the complete error in judgment?
Where's the success is the alternative perspective?
Well, I mean, you do look at the young pitchers.
Yeah.
Right. You do look at the moves he didn't make at times when I know in this room early in the season we were all talking about making them. Go get it, Sanchez and Stroman. They aren't helping you now. Go get some Arja.
Well, the one thing that could potentially come back to bite Alex, and this is what the naysayers will always raise, and I think it has some validity, and that was 2 years ago. This is a general manager that convinced ownership to spend at least 50% more than they had the previous year. And he executed those two significant deals with the concept that we can win now. And Beeston even said, our plan is to win for the next 3 years.
Right.
Not in 3 years, but for the next 3 years. Even to the point that Las Vegas made them the favorite prior to the 2013 season to win the World Series. Well, we were all wrong about that, and they were wrong about that. And you can't dismiss that element. You know, $120 million payroll up to $130-something million this year, and no playoff appearances. And certainly this year, with an opportunity, the opportunity to get into the postseason was there for them. And yes, as you pointed out, Alex didn't make significant moves. Was he hamstrung? I don't know.
I mean,
I'm prepared to say, let's play this thing out for another year or two. Let's see where these young pitchers take the team. But there will be those who will keep pointing to that. Said, you know, you had your chance. You gave us the 3 year plan. Where's the result?
But here's the thing is, if that's the case, he's a victim of his own success, because the reason he was able to accelerate whatever plan he had, you know, the kind of slow build through the farm system, was because that plan itself was successful. And so he was able to parlay that into, you know, the moves we all know about and the expenses they incurred. And yet, after the dust is settled, first of all, those moves haven't been a disaster. I mean, apart from Josh Johnson,
right,
everyone's been sort of as advertised. And yet, as the dust has settled, you still have more prospects and more encouragement on the younger side, you know, guys who are actually at the major league level than I think most of us would have predicted once those deals got done. We thought it was hollowed out and it was all or nothing, and it's not.
And my argument would be, if Alex doesn't make those deals, if he doesn't get Dickey, if he doesn't trade with the Miami Marlins, none of those guys were going to help the Jays be good last year or this year. And there are people who are going to say, okay, Jeff, but the money that you spent on him could go someplace else. To which my response would be, okay, you find me a free agent who's going to sign here.
Right. I mean, you'd still
with a team whose prospects are slim and none.
Exactly. It's that's the way you have to look at it. If Alex hadn't made those trades, would the Jays have been more of a contender last year and this year? Well, the answer is no. I mean, Travis d'Arnaud is the only one of those players. Danny Hetchavarria and Wilson Alvarez are both with Florida. But I think, you know, what the Jays got in return for that was a saw-off. Jake Marisnyk. Noah Syndergaard. The Mets tried to trade him at the trade deadline. They think he's a pitcher who's going to be hurt an awful lot. Travis d'Arnaud could be a real good catcher, or he could end up being a left fielder, because there are people with the Mets who don't think that he can hold up the wear and tear of being a catcher.
Well, so that's his problem too, is injury prone.
So it's not as if Alex hadn't made this deal, this team would have sailed through
first place
last year and this year. It's just
the irony, if you hadn't made that, like, still going forward, the fact that you have had this, you know, kind of a better than expected contribution from young pitchers primarily and some other prospects, the fact that you've still got 400 innings potentially in Dickey and Burley in your rotation means that, you know, you can leverage the Stromas and the Sanchez and the Hutchinsons in a way that you couldn't if they weren't be there.
The interesting part there that I think, you know, at some point we've talked a little bit about it here too, is what do you do with those two guys? Because you may be at a point right now where you have to deal one of those two guys. And most people believe Dickey gets you a return and Burley doesn't because his contract is too big. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But you're almost at the point where you have to cut one of those two guys loose and maybe both and take a chance. I know, but what does Alex do this offseason?
Are we answering that question now or later?
Well, if you can do it in 15 seconds.
Are you cutting them because of money or because you can expect a return? Because if it's not for a return...
Well, your return can come either in the form of a trade or increased budget to go out and find and get somebody else in free agency.
You can't send them both.
I think trade Burley, one of your middle young guys, maybe even Norris and Burley, throw some money in and try to get an impact bat. Pick up half of Burley's contract, maybe $7 million. put a guy like Norris in there.
You can make the argument you've got enough pitching already and maybe too much.
You might
have one or two too many starters.
You're going to need two position players. You're going to need them somehow.
I don't argue that. It's an interesting theory. But if Alex stays, and as I said before, Beeston stays, I think Alex stays, this is going to be probably the most interesting offseason.
I agree totally.
Not building this team.
I agree.
Now tweaking it and reconstructing it.
Totally.
This Greek, I don't think he can come back with this same group.
Agreed totally.
Thank you, Blair. Lovely to see you.
Thank you. Good seeing you guys.
When we come back, Dil Muhammad is a mayoral candidate in the city of Mississauga who has an idea. Well, he has a platform. His platform is bring the Argos to Mississauga. We'll build them a stadium. Really? Is this a business plan or a political platform? We're going to try and find out when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Before the hour. One thing is certain, there's never been a shortage at any time in the history of the Toronto Argonauts of people who have ideas on how to fix them. Some really smart people, some very wealthy people, have become a lot less wealthy because they thought they had ways to fix the Toronto Argonauts, and the Argonauts have never been as broken as they are now. But our next guest got an idea. He is a candidate for mayor of Mississauga, and he wants to bring the Argonauts to that metropolis, and he claims he's serious. Here's Dil Muhammad. Dil, good of you to join us today.
It's a real pleasure to meet you, sir.
So, I read about your plan. Where's the money coming from for the stadium?
Can I just tell you something about me first? So you want to go straight to the question?
Well, I want to go straight to the question. It's a sports show, unfortunately. I want to deal with the sports issue.
You know what we are planning to do? We are not only putting a stadium. We are putting a 200-store shopping mall. We are also putting a ballet theater and ballet school. And we are also putting a playground for playland for the children. It's called Support City. And the stadium is only a part of it, which will be called Hazel McCallion Pavilion. Now, can I go further, sir?
Yeah. Can you tell me who's going to pay for it?
Now, first of all, I will answer that question, but you have to realize one thing. When you put a stadium in Toronto or Montreal or anywhere else, it becomes a white elephant, and they cannot afford to maintain that stadium. I got an idea. This was bubbling in my heart, in my dreams, in my vision for a long time, that the place should be, because I'm a businessman, I'm an entrepreneur, I take it everything for business. It should not cost anybody any money, but as a matter of fact, it will make a lot of money, it will create a lot of employment, and Mississauga will get lots of taxes out of it. Now, sir, about the money, I'll tell you. If you want to put a stadium, say it's $100 million, right?
That'd be cheap.
Right. It'll be cheap to make it 120 or whatever you want to make, but okay. I'll tell you where the money is going to come from. And it's a matter of, you know, it's a fun, it's a game, and it's an excitement to tell the people that it's not that difficult to make that stadium or the sports city. Why, sir? If I am a mayor, I'm going to go to the region. I'm going to go to the province. I'm going to go to the federal government. Give me a piece of land. I want to build this thing, this idea. I want this land free for 99 years lease. Sir, if I am in the power, I will be able to do it. And then as a mayor, I'll tell the developers, hey, there is no going to be any development charge, and there is the tax postponement. I'll postpone the tax for you for the next 10, 20, 30 years. Does it make sense to you, sir?
No.
The cost of building this will be half now. Then we will go to, say, for example, the Square One, say the Sherway Gardens, say the Yorkdale Mall, to the big people, hey, are you interested in coming and joining us? Because it's a profitable venture. We were building that, and all of a sudden we hear that Argos need a home. And where is the best home better than Mississauga? You know, the population of Peel 3 million people, 11% of the Ontario. And look at the Toronto, 2.3 million with so many teams, they cannot even cater to one properly. How many people is saturated? When they come to Mississauga, Mississauga will only be looking for one team.
Dale,
everybody will be, yes, sir.
Why would the people who do their business at Square One or at Sherway Gardens want to sponsor another facility, shopping facility that would suck away some of their business? That's one question.
Even if you
have the costs, right, someone still has to promise and write a check for $60, $70 million. So that's I'm curious about that. And then three,
who's going to own
where,
it?
It sounds like a massive, massive requirement of land. And I'm just wondering where in Mississauga,
Are you pessimistic, sir, or being optimistic, sir? Tell me, this is a government project.
The word is realistic. I mean, I understand, and with due respect, sir, I understand you're running for political office. And, we've, in a political race, we see people try and pull rabbits out of the hat, things that might be popular in terms of garnering votes. And I acknowledge this is one of them. And I respect that. I understand that. But this has no basis in reality. The federal government is not giving you land. The federal government is not going to give you money to build a sports stadium. They have already established their position in terms of future funding of sports facilities. They only will give money if it's attached to an educational institution, and even at that, they're reluctant to do it. The Ontario government is broke. The Ontario government is trillions of dollars in debt.
I want to make them, he said, you don't know who I am. I'm a pharmacist, and this is my mandate. You know, I'll take a couple of minutes to explain you. I will save
$1 billion.
I will save $1 billion to the province. And look at my way of saving it, sir. I want to say only two things to you. When they built the Sky Dome, they did not have no plans at how the money is going to be returned. When they built in Montreal, it was a disaster too. But what I am trying to present is, and I'm going to back it up with my own support, sir, the $130 billion of the budget of Ontario government. Out of that, 51 cents is spent on the health. And said, you know how many people die with cancer? 30%. And you know how many people die with the blood pressure or the heart attacks? 20%. So 50% of the health dollars are being wasted or spent on these two ailments. And brother, with my technique, with my ability, with my knowledge, and with my experience, I can save heart attacks totally. I can save these hip replacement and knee.
Dale, I appreciate your position.
I plan to save billions of dollars.
Dale, I appreciate your position. I wish you good luck with this thing. We're a sports show. It's not that we don't care about people, and it's not that we don't care about illnesses and solving those problems. But it doesn't address the platform that got you the publicity that allowed you to be on this program today, and that was building a stadium for the Toronto Argonauts. We wish you good luck with it. You will understand, I hope, why any sane-thinking person doesn't buy it. Thank you for your appearance today. Dale Muhammad, mayoral candidate for the city of Mississauga. Wow, it's worse than I thought it was. Not only is there no
See, BMO's not so crazy now, is it?
Negative no there. Thank you, Grange, for dropping by. Nice to see you as always.
Great. We'll see you Friday.
Again soon. Ken Reed will wander in here along with Nick Kyprios and later Commissioner Gary Bettman on Primetime.